Right. And then they used the privacy laws to stop that photo being published anywhere and got it removed from social media because they didn't want it, but that was their real unedited version. But you're right. One of my favorite books, Superfans.
Yeah.
You only need a thousand fans to basically build a business.
Yeah. Quality over quantity.
Yeah. So the maths here is actually, if you want to build a sustainable business, you need about 1,000 people. Now, obviously, the bigger the business get, the more fans you need, obviously. But for a solopreneur, 1,000 fans would probably feed their business for the next 10 years.
Yeah.
So reality is, if you had 200 fans, you'd probably sustain your business for 2 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. So actually, in amongst this, I need 10,000 followers, 50,000 followers. Now, I'm finding this on Instagram. I deleted my Instagram, started again to see what it was like. I had a load of people from old things that I used to be involved with and stuff. So I had a totally irrelevant audience. Start again.
Yep.
I think about 900 and something followers now. So I'm nearly at the 1,000.
Yeah.
But I'm actually getting 2 or 3 people a day now messaging me the clients.
Yeah.
And I'm asking them what their problem is. And I'm just helping them and just adding value to the network to build the following.
Yeah. And I think that if we kind of, I guess, link this back to what we were talking about earlier in terms of stress and overwhelm, is that often these, whether it's solopreneurs, like you said, or whether it's people in kind of marketing teams of bigger organizations, sales teams, and so on and so forth, get so caught up on vanity metrics of how many, how many followers they've got, for example, or how many likes they're getting, how many comments they're getting. And we know that followers, likes, and comments make a difference to your reach. We know that. So they're not completely irrelevant. However, what really matters is how many sales you're getting.
Yeah.
But if you're getting caught up on kind of building numbers that don't really matter, you're adding another plate that you're spinning, which is stressful for you in amongst the rest of your life, and you don't really need to.
There's metrics that can help our signs of success, but those by themselves don't equal success.
No, absolutely not. So, you can't go in and pay your mortgage with number of likes on an Instagram post, right?
Although, if you watch videos from Charlotte Dobra on YouTube, she's so funny. She basically takes the mick of influencers where they say, hey, will you do my wedding shoot? I've got followers on Instagram.
Good exposure.
Yeah. So I think, just to come back, I think every generation has had some challenges and the challenges are different.
Yes.
And so at some point, if I've not got there already, I will become the grumpy old guy who goes, you lot have had it easy and all this kind of stuff.
I get the feeling you've always been the grumpy old guy, Dean.
That's not nice. You're not very nice to me.
Hey, you started it.
But no, I think it's a different world, different challenges. Hard work isn't slaving away anymore.
No,
in
not
the same,
in the same
way,
way
as it used to be.
Yeah.
You know, my dad was down the coal mine.
Yeah.
He probably can't understand what I do.
Yeah.
He gets it. Oh, you're on that social media thing. But I don't think he really understands how that is beneficial.
Yeah. What are you adding to society?
Yeah. So he probably So I have that with my family. I don't think that's malicious. I just think their generation doesn't understand it
of
in
course.
The ways. And I think our generation, I'm scraping the bottom of the barrel to get
We're
into
only
your
4
generation.
Years apart,
though. Yeah. Yeah. But those 4 years make a huge difference. We will struggle to understand the next generation.
Yeah.
Like, for an example, the metaverse, right? I know we're going way off topic here. We'll probably end up in two
There was
podcasts.
A topic?
We'll probably end up we'll probably end up in two podcast episodes here, but I don't fully get the metaverse yet.
No. And that's from someone who is immersed in social media.
Yeah. Because I can't quite figure out how we embrace that in the sense of what is value.
I think the interesting position that the millennial generation are in is that we were the generation when all of this stuff started kind of coming in. So we were the generation who, when we were kids, there was no such thing as a mobile phone, and that came in when we were like in our teens, or like in a popular sense anyway. You know, obviously Wall Street with their huge bricks and stuff, we're not talking about that, but as a thing that everyone has, computers, the internet, stuff like that. You know, when I was a kid, we didn't have a PC at home. Mm-hmm. And then when I was a bit older in my childhood, we did. And so we're crossing that boundary of the generations now are what they call digital natives, and the generations that came before mm-hmm. us had none of it. And quite a lot of people are still, they're on to Facebook and things like that, but they're still kind of not really sure about how it works and so on and so forth. And I think that the metaverse is a prime example of something that we're now the generation when the internet came in, yeah. who are going, oh, it'll never take off.
I think if you, there's a lot of things that have got to change to make the metaverse be mass adopted. In that, like, for an example, the VR stuff, yeah. right? I've got a VR set at home.
Yeah.
My son has. It's fun to go on, and you can look around the pyramids and you can do yeah. all that stuff, right? So that's pretty cool. But after doing it a little while, you feel a bit nauseous doing
yeah.
it.
Yeah, like motion sickness.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I could get how... Have you seen the film Surrogates? The whole world is like a metaverse on Surrogates.
No, I don't think I've seen that.
It's not quite. It's like you've got...
I've seen Ready Player One, which is metaverse-y, yeah. isn't it?
But you've got to basically have a world where it all kind of pins itself together.
Yeah.
So like the confidence in the assets in the metaverse, so NFTs and everything, in the where we are as a planet right now and the economy right now is it's all very speculative. But when you build an ecosystem around it, those assets become hard assets. At the moment, they're virtual assets. Like you can buy a GIF, but you don't own the GIF, right? You've just bought a bit of code that says you own an NFT of the GIF,
yeah.
right? So they're rising and falling relative to each other. But when you build this kind of virtual world,
yeah.
all of that stuff becomes real value.
Yeah.
Because you've now created a world that it all lives in. And
yep.
at the moment, we're in this kind of world where we've got a physical world and a digital world, and the digital world is an amplification of the physical world. But the metaverse, are you still with me here, by the way?
Do I look like I've glazed over?
A little bit. But the metaverse is like another world.
Yeah.
And at the moment, all our experiences are of a digital, a world that's enhanced by digital, not a totally digital world.
Another example of how younger people are adopting this stuff already and have been for years is like the game Fortnite, where,
yeah.
where they're spending money, and things like Roblox and stuff like that as well, where they're spending digital currency on outfits for their avatar,
mm-hmm.
Which I'm turning very much into my dad at this point and going... But you haven't got anything, like,
yeah,
because it's alien to me. But I'm seeing kids who are spending actual money, converting it into money in Fortnite, and spending it to buy gear and to buy clothing for their avatar. And that has been going on for years. And that's essentially what the metaverse is going to be, where people are buying stuff to outfit their avatar and also to kind of decorate their space, their home mm-hmm. in the metaverse. And it all seems so so detached from reality at the moment. But that's probably the same as it was with social media in the, you know, late 90s, early 2000s. LinkedIn was what, 2004 was one of the first big ones. And then you had Facebook in 2006, MySpace 2005 mm-hmm. maybe, 2004, five. But that at the time probably seemed like, but why are you doing that mm-hmm. to people who were, you know, 10, well, 15 years older?
See, I think there's a real advantage here with this, but there has to be so much that moves to make this happen. That's the question mark for me.
Mm.
If we have a virtual world and you go to work in the virtual, you know, we solve the VR issue of it, you know, hurting the bridge of your nose with having it on for so long. We solve those issues and we have a fully virtual world. So you can go to work in there. You can go, I've seen a Walmart shop in there. I don't know why you would want to go walking around a Walmart to pick up groceries. Why wouldn't you just, but anyway. But if you have an ecosystem that has a certain amount of critical mass,
yeah.
all of it makes sense.
Well, it's the uptake, isn't it? If enough people are using it, it becomes a marketplace for businesses, and therefore it becomes viable. But again, to kind of tie this back into something which is, I guess, one of my biggest concerns around something like the metaverse, is what are the economic impacts of that or the technological impacts of that, but what are the psychological impacts of that? And what are the physical impacts of that on our physical health? So, like, are people going to become even more... We talked about how the nature of work has changed. Is it going to get more sedentary?
Well, it's and you hit a point, and the only comparison we've got is the fakery of Instagram. Yeah? Okay. And it's not a good example, but on Instagram, you can present yourself, you can edit yourself, you can be whatever you want.
Yeah.
Now, the downside is the reality is when people meet you and realize that you're 10 kilos or whatever heavier and actually you've got a double chin that you've edited off and all of this stuff,
yep.
right? And you don't have the perfect you.
And they weren't your Range Rovers in Dubai.
Yeah. Then that's the disappointment. But if you become a fully digital world, you can be all of the inhibitions, all of the things that you don't like about yourself that hold you back fall away. But if our priority is there, what happens to the real us?
What happens to our meat avatar that we're walking around in at the moment?
Yeah.
Maybe this is already a metaverse, Steve.
Do we end up like Jabba the Hutt sat in a room being fed by robots and stuff?
Yeah, or on an IV drip because we don't want to take our headset off. They're just giving us nutrients. I mean, I'm pretty sure Elon Musk already thinks that we're in a metaverse at the moment because he's got a whole team
simulation,
of people. Yeah, a whole team of people working to find a way out of it, which means he's made the assumption that we actually are. It's no longer are we, it's how do we get out of it. So interesting different viewpoints here. But when you say the inhibitions fall away and those barriers and those things we don't like about ourselves, I think that in that context, we are not dealing with them, we are avoiding them. And I think that that makes the inhibitions worse because all we're doing is we're essentially becoming an enabler for ourselves to go, well, actually, I don't need to deal with my insecurities and have therapy or to have any of these things to help me live a better life. I can just go and live somewhere where I can pretend they don't exist. Is that a healthy path to go down in terms of avoiding difficult emotions and that escapism?
We don't know what the long-term consequences of escapism is in this way, really.
No, we don't. That's why it's my concern.
Social media has been around for what, properly? 10 years properly?
Yeah.
Where it's like really kind of mass adopted, maybe not even that for some of them.
Yeah.
But 10 years, we don't know what the long-term implications of this are. We know that there are some pretty toxic minority stuff that comes out in terms of a small percentage of people come out as horrible human beings.
Well, it platforms everyone pretty equally, doesn't it? That's the thing, is it gives everyone a voice, and some of those voices are probably not ones you want to listen to. But it is a minority. It just happens to be a very loud minority.
But that's because of the way social media works.
Of course, yeah.
If you stoke outrage, controversy, it magnifies.
Yeah. And it keeps people on the platform, and so the platforms benefit from people being pissed off, basically, don't they?
It benefits from people attacking other people, and people, you know, something happens in your street, you want to come to the window and have a look.
Yeah.
What do they call it?
Is that on a global level?
Up north, they call it rubbernecking, right?
Curtain twitches.
Somebody has a crash, and you want to see what's going on.
Yep.
And actually, that's what happens on social media. Is it healthy? No. Does it create public trials, trial by social media?
Yeah.
Yeah, where somebody attacks somebody else. Nobody says what's actually gone on here. They just believe one side and just attack the other. It's like, hopefully some of this stuff will sort itself out. But I think, I like social media. I enjoy social media.
I think overall it's a force for good,
but
overall.
I think that maybe some of the issues are just because the world is in one place.
Well, so you think that by expanding that into a digital universe, it gives more space for people to kind of be themselves and not confront each other as much. I think
one of the things that's good about social media, about the metaverse and all this stuff, is it allows people to find their tribe.
True.
Yeah. Yep. So other people who are dealing with issues like you are, other people who are feeling the same way as you are, you can find them and get support.
Yeah, whereas when it was just us in our village,
yeah,
the chances of someone else feeling exactly the same as us was very slim.
That's where I think the good part of this is some of the minorities in society, where they may feel isolated or prejudiced against, can find other people who can support them.
Yeah.
And now that group can say, no, we're not going to do that anymore. We're not standing. They can unite to make their cause.
And they can educate people who otherwise would have been completely oblivious to that.
Yeah.
I've learned a huge amount about various segments of society that I've never interacted with in real life. Because I grew up in a village of 800 people, and now I live in a different village of 800 people. It's like I live quite sheltered in that way.
We live in an area where there isn't a huge amount of diversity.
No, there isn't. There isn't. It's my one bugbear about this part of the country. Everything else, like, I love bringing up my kids around here, but one of the things that I have an issue with is that lack of diversity, and that's why I like to take them to places where there is more cultural mix. And why I think that the internet and these kind of online communities will allow them to experience that diversity in a way that they can't in their village.
But the great thing about social media being that those people who feel isolated can find people going through same experiences, you know, all of that stuff, and they can rally together to raise issues. I think that's good. But the flip side of that happens too is some of the people with the views or lack of tolerance or lack of appreciation for other people's views can congeal.
yeah, they found their tribe too.
Yeah, and unfortunately they become louder.
Yeah, yeah. And I had this conversation, a very similar conversation to this, although far less eloquent, I must say, so thank you for that. when I was in the pub a couple of weeks ago, where people were bitching and moaning about social media, and I came at it from this perspective of going, it is a tool. And in the same way as a hammer can, you can use a hammer to build a wardrobe, you can also use it to smash someone's hand.
Yeah.
You know, it's a tool, and in the wrong hands, it can be dangerous. I think on balance...
You build wardrobes with hammers?
With nails. You nail it together.
I don't know.
Look at me. Do I look like I build wardrobes?
It comes with one of those little screwy things that you just turn on.
Look, don't get hung up on the details, Dean. The point I'm making is that I came in defense of social media, despite the fact that I don't think it's all amazing.
You left Facebook because some of it was pretty toxic, didn't you?
I left Facebook because I'd thought it was toxic for a long time. But here's the thing, I'm still on Twitter, right? So it can't have just been that. The reason that there was a final point where I went, you know what, I'm not doing Facebook anymore, was because for a long time, it was where I'd spent the most time, and therefore, it was the one which felt the most toxic, and it felt like it was full of vitriol and full of arguments. But the thing which was the tipping point for me was when it no longer, on balance, was worth me being there, because I wasn't really... I'd moved from working with individuals to working with organisations.
You mean you didn't like the continuous friend requests from appointment setters?
I still get that on LinkedIn.
Appointment setters?
Well... No, not appointment setters, but just other stuff.
I get, on Facebook, I get appointment setters. Hey, do you need appointment setters? We can get you the best.
What's an appointment setter?
So it's basically somebody who will DM the shit out of other people's accounts.
Or like they do it to you.
Yeah. And say, hey, how are you? What's your fitness goals?
Oh, right.
And then they basically hook you up to somebody else who'll sell you a course or whatever.
Okay.
So I get tons of them. And then shortly after them, I get the, hey, I can help you to get to 10K months in 90 days. And I kind of already done that.
Yeah. Do your research, guys.
I've actually sold my courses to some people on there because they go, I say, so how are you doing? And they go, oh, I haven't started yet. And I'm like, hang on a minute. You're trying to sell me to get to 10K, but you haven't done 10K yourself. Anyway, that's another story.
It is. I mean, this is a tangent, but on that note, you'll be pleased to know that when I get messages on LinkedIn from people who are trying to sell me LinkedIn courses using a cold message, I'm like, do you know what? Go and follow this page. Go and connect with Dean Seddon, and maybe you'll learn some stuff. So I'm still sending people in your direction. But the I can't remember where we started with this.
I thought about doing something really tricky, really devious, going into some of these Facebook groups and saying, hey, is there anybody in here who can help me get to 10K months and literally be absolutely barraged by people?
That's inbound leads galore,
isn't it?
Inbound
leads, isn't it? Because they're all going, I can help you, I can help you. And then I can go back and say, yeah, but I can get you to 50K.
No, you flipped it on its head. Well, what I was like, the reason I came off Facebook was because I thought that it was no longer a good platform. It didn't work. My notifications were even all in the wrong order. It would say you have however many notifications, you click on it and it'd be from like 5 days ago. And I was just like, it's not even a good platform anymore. So it's not worth enduring the hassle just in order to, you know, then deal with a platform that doesn't really work. You're going to get that platform anywhere, even on LinkedIn, where I feel like it's a lot less than it is elsewhere. You still get this kind of like these diatribes where people rant, and I'm like, it's less, but also it's worth enduring because the rest of the platform works really, really well for me.
LinkedIn's done quite a good job at trying to prevent a slippery slope.
Yeah,
I'm not so sure that they're getting everything right.
No. Does any platform get
it
right?
I have seen some of the 6 and 7 figure people. I even saw a nine figure
that's
mentor
a lot of figures
on there. 9 figures is a billion, right? No,
it's hundreds of millions, isn't
yeah,
it?
Hundreds,
nine zeros
hundreds of millions. Yeah. I help people get to nine figure revenue, and I think, okay. Not sure.
Is that per month or per year? And what are their details?
Well, her course was $197.
Wow. That seems very reasonable.
But yeah, I mean, there is a little bit of that. But I think generally LinkedIn's a bit more grown up and a bit more of a pragmatic audience.
Yeah. Yeah.
So some of it.
And my notifications are in the right order.
Yeah.
So that helps. So I've got very few wants. I'm a simple man, Dean. All I want is my notifications to be in the right order.
But I think coming full circle to this kind of, it's really stressful, and I know how this social media thing works as well.
Yep.
That adds to it. You know, I've experienced somebody taking a pot shot, and it can feel horrendous.
Yeah.
And
it gets you in the pit of your stomach, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Especially when you're conscientious about what you do.
I've seen some people ripped to shreds on social media.
Yeah.
Because somebody decides they doesn't like the way they do their business, or they don't like this about whatever. And in the scheme of things, none of it matters.
Yeah.
You know, I have a different view on how to use LinkedIn than other people, right? We know that there's something that's worked better than others. But somebody got ripped a new butthole on LinkedIn the other day, and I was like, that's their livelihood.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
Guys, this is not about, you know, they're not a criminal. They're not stealing from people. They're not doing this. They're not doing that.
They're just doing something in a way that isn't the way you do it.
Yeah, but they're just trying to get by.
Yeah.
They're just trying to earn a living the best they know. Sometimes I can be a bit prickly about cold outreach, but I won't do it publicly because...
And you won't do it to specific individuals. That's the difference.
Yeah.
If you're talking about a practice that you don't agree with, that's one thing. But if you screenshot, including names and all of that stuff, and say, and you go after the individual, it becomes that kind of ad hominem attack where it's about the person.
Yeah.
The practice, if then that person is like, you know, or someone who goes, yeah, I do that and I feel like I've been attacked, they're not going to feel great about it, but they're not going to feel like you've named and shamed them personally. Mm-hmm. So there's ways of going about it.
But when you're on the receiving end of that,
yep.
It feels like the bottom's falling out of your world.
Yeah.
And it feels like I'm ruined.
Yeah.
And
yeah, I've been there as well. It's not nice.
It's awful. I know some of our team have had it done to them by competitors.
Yep.
That have literally gone for them.
Yep.
And it's like, guys, they're just doing the job.
Yeah.
Leave them alone. Right? It's not like, you know, they just don't like what they're saying.
But this is that thing again where people are hiding behind an avatar, essentially. They're hiding behind a keyboard and feel empowered to say and do things that they wouldn't say and do in person. And I guess my concern around the metaverse is that people will feel more confident to say things that they wouldn't say to someone in person. Although another conversation that I had on this front recently was, is that going to be exacerbated by the metaverse or kind of reined in a bit because it feels like you're stood in front of someone because your avatar's right there and their avatar's right there.
Yeah. Whereas
and it's not typed.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure how that will play out. But I think that one of the best things that we can do when we understand that actually social media being an incredible tool that we have to amplify our message and to grow our business or to become, you know, a thought leader or to become or to push our philanthropic work or whatever it happens to be that we're doing, whatever message it is that we're amplifying, if we're aware that any tool is going to cause issues if we use it for too long without a rest, you know, like if you're using a jackhammer, there's only so long you can hold on to it before like your hands are ruined.
It's the extremes, like we said at the beginning, it's the extremes of if you go too far into something, it's going to have harmful effects.
Yeah, and we need to take breaks from it.
Yeah.
I had just over 2 weeks at Christmas. It was like 19 days, I think, 18 or 19 days I had, where I deleted all social media apps off my phone. I deleted my emails off my phone. I didn't even log on to my laptop. And it was for the whole kind of school Christmas holidays. And that was the longest I'd not been on social media platforms since February 2009.
Wow.
And I hadn't really thought about it until that point. But when I thought, actually, you know what? When I got back from it, what was mine and Lucy's honeymoon, we were away for 5 months. There weren't any smartphones then. So when we wanted to go on social media and upload some of our photos onto Facebook, we did it in an internet cafe. Remember those? And then when we got back in February 2009, back into the real world, the longest I'd probably gone not going on social media was maybe 2 days.
Mm.
And so to have this kind of 2.5 weeks where I didn't have anything, it was just like, huh, like I'm realizing the stuff around me and I'm not kind of glued to this little screen. And I think that another challenge is because we use it for business and we use it for pleasure to keep up with our friends and stuff like that. It's like, where do we have the break? Mm. If we're using it for both, we go, oh, finish work, what are my friends up to?
Yeah.
It's like, it drains us. It does suck our energy a little bit. And I think that there's no problem with using it. But I think what we need to understand, you were saying at the beginning about this difference between the worst case scenario and the best case scenario and the truth being in the middle. It's the same is true in this case.
Yeah.
And in fact, in any case, because it's like, is social media evil or is it the best thing ever? Neither. It's somewhere in the middle.
Yeah.
Should I be on social media all the time promoting my business or should I not even be on social media at all? Somewhere in the middle.
Mm.
You know, we need to have this understanding that all different aspects of our life are important and we need to find that balance. And that's what's going to give us that sustainability in terms of that contentment of happiness that I mentioned earlier.
And that is, as we kind of wrap up, that is exactly what you're doing right now.
Yeah. Yeah. And the reason that I've moved into working with organizations is there's a few reasons, but one of the biggest ones is that the majority of people who really need the help with their well-being, physically and mentally, are not going to seek it out.
Mm-hmm.
And this is something that I discovered when I was working with individuals, is that if someone is really struggling with their physical well-being or with their mental well-being, they're very unlikely to approach me as a coach.
Mm-hmm.
And if I approach them, they're very unlikely to talk to me about it because it's so raw for them. Now, if I go into an organization, and this is why at the start there was a lot of toying around with, do we make these workshops compulsory or optional? And what I've settled on is when I go and deliver this training, it's compulsory. The reason being, if you make it optional, the people who will come along are people who are already into fitness, already into well-being.
They're already mindful of their current condition.
Exactly. And so they're into it and so they feel comfortable to come along and listen to the talk about it. Whereas the people I want to reach are the people who feel alienated and disconnected from fitness and well-being because most people have had terrible experiences with PE at school, for example, being the first one, and that's just made them hate exercise.
Mm-hmm.
And then later in life with the fitness industry because of the six packs and the models and all of this kind of unattainable, unrelatable imagery. And you just go, well, that's not me. So I don't want to hear it because I already feel rubbish about myself. Whereas if you make it compulsory, then everyone's there. And some people, they may not be necessarily that engaged at the start. But when I start delivering my message, which is one of a great deal of accessibility and balance and moderation and fitness as a currency that you can spend on things which add, you know, happiness to your life,
mm-hmm.
For want of a better word, that quality of life improves. And then those people who go, I'm not a fitness person, I wish I wasn't here in this room, their ears prick up and they go, oh, actually, I could probably do some of the stuff he's talking about, because I'm not talking about diets. I'm not talking about crazy workout plans.
Little bits.
It's little changes. And those are the things which add up over time. And because they're accessible, once you've kind of got a couple of habits changed, people start believing that they can make more changes. Mm. And so that's why I started working with organizations, because not only are the individuals getting the benefit, which is why I came into this industry 10 years ago, it was because I wanted to make a difference to it, to those individuals and to society as a whole. Same reason I went into teaching before that, I wanted to make a difference. But not only that, but the companies are going to benefit from having a fitter, more well workforce.
Well, the companies, hopefully the employees see that the companies are invested in the health of their team.
Yeah, they feel valued.
And the health of their team improves, so in theory, they get a better member of staff or a better team.
Well, if you look at some of the numbers which are coming out in more and more studies being done about this now, which is fantastic. Deloitte did one last year, and they've just had a new one which has come out, a new report that's come out this week, which I haven't read through all of yet. But the numbers from last year showed that the cost to the UK economy of poor mental well-being, this is without even the physical well-being, but poor mental well-being is $45 billion a year to the UK economy. Wow. Which, given the UK, the number of workers in the UK, works out at £1,285 per head. Not per ill head, but per head.
Per person.
Yeah, so if you've got a company of 1,000 people, you know, you've got £1.2 million per year you're spending on poor well-being.
Yeah.
And the same,
or it's costing you in productivity. And
well, it's the three things that they were looking at was the cost of staff churn and retraining and hiring and all that stuff, the cost of absenteeism, and the cost of presenteeism, or lost productivity when people are in the office. So it's only based on those three things. Now, the only stat that I'd seen from this week's report is that that's increased by 20%, that cost, in the last 2 years. The same report showed that for every pound you invest in a good mental well-being program. Again, this is only on the mental side of it. If it's physical as well, it's even more cost. Mm-hmm. But if you invest a pound in your mental well-being provision, you get £5 back in terms of reduction in churn, absenteeism and presenteeism. That's a 500% ROI.
Yeah.
Now, if you went to anyone in a finance department and said, I can give you something which has a 500% ROI, according to this study by Deloitte, who are pretty good with numbers, they should jump at that.
Yeah.
But the barrier, I think, is not a financial barrier. It's a, we've always done it this way, we don't want to upset the apple cart kind of thing.
Yeah, and I think as well, companies are mindful that they don't want to be appearing like they're telling employees how to live their life as well. I think that's a...
Yeah, it's a balance, a fine balance to strike. And I think that if you... And this is one of the things that I try and get across to leadership in these companies, is that... Each individual has their responsibility for their well-being. The leadership of the company has a responsibility for providing a supportive environment. Not, you need to do this, you need to do that. But hey, if you want to do this stuff, here's some education, here's some support. If you put on talks and seminars and bits and pieces like that, then of course people can take that up if they want to. Other people don't have to. It's got to be the balls in your court for the individuals. Otherwise it does become... a bit authoritarian. But I don't think that's a reason to kind of wash your hands of it entirely and go, look, if you want a gym membership, go and get a gym membership. I think that education, support, accessibility, there's so many moving parts, and I understand why it's a bit overwhelming because it's a relatively new thing that businesses are having to do. But if we talk about generations again, the generations that are coming into the workforce now in their early 20s have a very high expectation of how the company's going to look after them.
So we're out of time.
I think we were out of time a while ago.
But this has been fascinating. I think there's a lot of things that are crossing over between our worlds and your world.
Yeah.
And I think we've just put the world to rights.
I think we have. This is a kind of 2 a.m. after a couple of glasses of red wine conversation, really,
yeah,
wasn't it?
Yeah, I think so.
We've done the metaverse, we've done generational differences.
And hopefully, I know we touched on some sensitive topics, but the idea was... Let's cover stuff, not to kind of provoke, but to just give a balanced view on stuff. So hopefully we've not offended anybody by doing it.
Yeah, and I think the thing is, if we have at any point, and it wasn't intentional, and we're like the kind of approach I always have with any conversation and with life in general, is that I'm still learning, mm-hmm. and I will get things wrong, and that's okay. So if I have made a mistake, please feel free to tell me.
I make them all the time.
because I want to learn, I want to grow, I want to develop. And I think, again, this is one of the beauties of social media and the internet and content and stuff like that, is that we can put stuff out there and we can see what lands, what doesn't. We can learn from other people. We can have these conversations in a way that 20, 30 years ago we couldn't have. Mm. So, you know, it's all a learning journey, isn't it?
It is. And Jay, thank you for coming. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Next time we'll do it in the metaverse.
Yes.
With our extra VR clothing.
Oh,
and all
now
that
I'm going to have to invest in some NFT hoodies.
Yeah, NFT hoodies. So thanks for joining us. Jay, thanks again. And
thanks,
go and check out Jay on LinkedIn and on Instagram. We'll put his details on the video somewhere or on the audio somewhere. Jay, thank you.
Thank you.